Hello.
Namo Bunzi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bunzi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bunzi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Guanzhiying Pusa. Namo Guanzhiying Pusa. Namo Guanzhiying Pusa. Po Ye Po Lo Mi Do Sin Jing. Guanzhi Zai Pusa. Sing Sen Po Ye Po Lo Mi Do Si. Zhao Jian Wu Yun Jie Kong Du Yi Che Ku E.舍利子，舍不异空，空不异色，色即是空，空即是色，受想行识亦复如是。舍利子，是诸法空相，不生不灭，不垢不净，不增不减，是故空中无色，无受想行识，无眼耳鼻舌身意，无色声香味触，诸法无眼界，乃至无意之界，无无明意，无无明净，乃至无老死意，无老死净，无苦集灭道，无智意，无得已，无所得故，菩提萨埵依般苦婆罗蜜多故，心无挂碍，无挂碍故，无有恐怖，远离颠倒梦想，究竟涅槃三世诸佛依般苦婆罗蜜多故，得阿耨多罗三藐三菩提，故知般若波罗蜜多是大神咒，是大明咒，是无上咒，是无等等咒，能除一切苦，真实不虚，故说般若波罗蜜多咒即是咒曰：揭谛揭谛波罗揭谛波罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃。
萨埵萨埵萨埵。Okay, we will now start the English version of the Heart Sutta. We will chant the Heart of the Prajnaparamita Sutta together. When Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva was practicing the profound Prajnaparamita, he illuminated the five skandhas and saw that they are all empty, and he crossed beyond all suffering and difficulty. Sariputta, form does not differ from emptiness, and emptiness does not differ from form. Form itself is emptiness, emptiness itself is form. So too are feeling, cognition, formation, and consciousness. Sariputta, all dhammas are empty of characteristic. They are not produced, not destroyed, not defiled, not pure, and they neither increase nor diminish. Therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, feeling, cognition, formation, or consciousness. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, or mind. No sight, sound, smell, taste, object of touch, or dhamma. No feel of eye, up to and including no feel of mind, consciousness, and no ignorant or ending of ignorant. Up to and including no old age and death or ending of old age and death. There is no suffering, no accumulating, no extinction, no way, and no understanding and non-attaining. Because nothing is attained, the Bodhisattva, through reliance on Prajnaparamita, is unimpeded in his mind. Because there is no impediment, he is not afraid, and he leaves distorted dream thinking far behind. Ultimately, Nirvana. All Buddhas of the three periods of time attain Anuttara Samyatsambuhi through reliance on Prajnaparamita. Therefore, know that Prajnaparamita is a great spiritual mantra, a great bright mantra, a supreme mantra, an unequal mantra. It can remove all suffering. It is genuine and not false. That is why the mantra of Prajnaparamita was spoken. Recite it like this. Gate gate paragate parasam gate bohi swatwa. Okay, we will start the Theravada Puja. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, สังฆังสรณังกัจฉามิดุติยัมปิบุตังสรณังกัจฉามิดุติยัมปิธัมมังสรณังกัจฉามิดุติยัมปิสังฆังสรณังกัจฉามิตติยัมปิบุตังสรณังกัจฉามิตติยัมปิธัมมังสรณังกัจฉามิตติยัมปิสังฆังสรณังกัจฉามิปานาติปาตาเวรมณีสิกขาปดังสมาทิยามิอาทินาทานาเวรมณีสิกขาปดังสมาทิยามิกามิสุมิจฉาจารเวรมณีสิกขาปดังสมาทิยามิมุสาวาทาเวรมณีสิกขาปดังสมาทิยามิสุราเมรยามัจจาปมาทัตถานาเวรมณีสิกขาปดังสมาทิยามิสาธุสาธุสาธุ Okay, pay respect mindfully. Okay, very good afternoon to all, huh?We will start the Heart Sutta. Okay, before we start, we will read the opening verse. The verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning.So this is a opening verse. Okay, so now we will go to the short notes. Those who don't have the notes, you can request from Sister Lee. Okay. The 17 Heart Sutta notes, short notes.This one was done last week, 24th June 2012. Okay, short notes taken to assist in developing a clearer and better understanding of the sutta discussed. Part 1 is the recap and emphasis on the previous lesson. Okay, here we only have a short paragraph because we have dealt on this for quite a while. So...I think should be very clear by now. The direct seeing refers to the silent mind in pure awareness to see things as they are without any thought. So the key thing about sati is when you are aware, there is no thought. It's before the knowing. To arise the third turning wisdom, or what the Buddha called Bhavana Maya Panya. If you have wisdom, the five aggregates of form and mind will not be a problem.Because they will be non-grasping aggregate. Reversing the light of awareness to shine within, to cultivate the daily mindfulness with clear comprehension or sati sampajana is very important. So this daily mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action, all movement and all activity within the present moment, this is the real meditation.You can only understand your form and mind clearly if you can have this sati sampajana developed. So this part, I think, we don't have to go through anymore. It's already many times we have gone through it. This is just a final summary of what you need to know. Then we go to part two, prajna and emptiness. The Heart Sutta proper. Whenever you are not peaceful and not happy, the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion are there. Huh? So by now, your cultivation should focus on this. Huh? Whenever you feel your mind state not happy, not peaceful, means you do not have the wisdom, the evil root already there. So there is some form of selfishness or some form of problem or unhappiness. Then all this is conditioned by your delusion. The mind still grasps, it's still wanting its way. So this part, you need to aware. So whenever you are not peaceful and not happy, the evil roots of greed, hatred, delusion are there. Whereas wisdom lead to peace, harmony, love, happiness, and joy. When you have the panya, the wisdom, your mind is very different. There is a lot of peace, a lot of joy, a lot of happiness within. Then there is this what they call metta. Then you have a lot of understanding. That's why it brings about harmony. You will flow, you will accord, you will not create division. You will not even create conflict or argument. So this is the Dhamma to contemplate, and it is a very good check for all cultivator. All cultivator means it includes even all the bhikkhus and all the monks. So this is a very good check. So the Buddha reprimanded Ananda on the saying, see no evil and hear no evil, then you are peaceful. Because according to the Buddha, evil or not evil is all in the mind. So how you interpret whether that thing is evil or not evil is all in your mind. So if you have wisdom, there is no such thing as see no evil. Because when you have wisdom, you will perceive everything as the way it is, understand? No right, no wrong, no good, no bad. That's why it has equanimity. So there is no such thing as see no evil, hear no evil. Because whether it's evil or non-evil, it's all according to your understanding of the situation. If you have wisdom, there is no such thing. So that's why for those who understand, the world is the world, and it's not a problem if you have wisdom to confront its reality. For nobody can make you unhappy or miserable unless you allow yourself to be so via your own delusion. So if you are already at peace because of wisdom, you can see anything actually. You can hear anything. You can even live. Life itself become like your teacher. You learn from life. Everything that arises is a learning process. No matter how negative or evil as it appears to lay people, to normal human being or living being, but to the enlightened one, they will perceive it with wholesomeness. They will turn it around, then develop the wisdom out of it. That's why it becomes blessing in disguise. So if you don't react, you are at peace. When you are at peace, it's because the wisdom is there. Then initially when you are on the path, when you are just going through the cultivation, you have to develop the patience to be at peace before you have the wisdom to act. So the first understanding is to accept the reality of the moment with understanding. Do not react. Thing is just the way it is, cannot be otherwise. So if you accept the reality of the moment, your mind is at peace. You don't react, you don't create negativity, you don't do anything. You can just let things be. Then after that, you act with wisdom, understanding. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path is the path that will lead to the cessation of all suffering. That is the wisdom that you must have, Noble Eightfold Path. That's why you must cultivate the Noble Eightfold. Then you know how to act. Then you know how to accept the reality to your right view, right understanding. Then you will condition the right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood to resolve whatever life situation you are in. Then you will have the right effort to do the appropriate abandoning of defilement. Then there are four right effort. Whatever that has already arisen, the unwholesome thought or action or speech, you can abandon them through right effort. Then the other one is, once you have developed the wisdom and the understanding, you can even prevent them from arising. The right effort to prevent the arising of this unwholesome thought, speech or action. Then the other two is wholesome right effort. Right effort to actually arise the wholesome thought, the wholesome action and the wholesome speech that is still not in you. Then you have the right effort to refine upon and develop further whatever right thought, right speech and right action that you already have. So these are the four right efforts, followed by the sati or mindfulness, sama sati, right mindfulness, then sama samadhi. So this Noble Eightfold Path are the wisdom factors that you need to have to allow you to act appropriately so that there is no suffering, so that you can resolve everything amicably. Okay, then we move on to the next paragraph. There are three types of wisdom light. This one is based on Xuanhua, the commentary. The first wisdom light is the light of prajna, of language. Prajna is wisdom. This is equivalent to the first turning wisdom called Suttamaya Panya. So prajna of language or wisdom of language is the spoken language. That's why it's hearing of the sutta. So it's similar to Suttamaya Panya, first turning. Then the second wisdom light is the light of prajna or contemplation illumination. So contemplative wisdom is the second wisdom light. So this is equivalent to the second turning wisdom called Chintamaya Panya. Because after you have heard them, after you have heard the discourse of the Buddha, heard the sutta, then you can reflect and contemplate and develop the inquiry to develop the second turning wisdom. So this is called wisdom of contemplation and illumination. So under the what they call first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the Buddha called it Chintamaya Panya, second turning. Then the third turning wisdom, the light of prajna of the characteristic of actuality. This one is characteristic of actuality, means you see things as they are. So this is equivalent to the direct seeing wisdom born of bhavana or meditation, the silent mind. So that's why it is also equivalent to the third turning called bhavana maya panya. So all these three, now you will start to develop the understanding. They are all the same, except they use different words. Okay, this next one is what I have summarized for you. So we had it in diagram form. It's easier to understand. You have to return all external form or manifestation created by mind to mental consciousness. Then mental consciousness to the pure awareness or the true mind to realize the Buddha nature or oneness nature, which is also the source of all things. Like the word source is the beginning. From there everything come to be. So if you look at the diagram, there are four circles. The first one is external form. This represents the external manifestation of mind you create through your mental consciousness. All of the external form that you come to see are the external manifestation of mind. Everything that you come to perceive through your seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile and thought consciousness. So all these are creation from the mind. So if you want to develop the true understanding of how this creation come about, you need to return them accordingly. So all this external manifestation of mind, you need to return to mind consciousness. So they are actually, like the Buddha said, your mind. Your mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Everything arises when the mind arises. So mind is the creator. So through consciousness, That's why the universe is a world of consciousness, nothing else. Without consciousness, there is no knowing. Without consciousness, you are not even in a position to perceive anything. So when we ask ourselves, who are we, what are we have to look deep into this so-called form and mind. So our form and our mind, like I explained the previous Sunday, we have the five physical senses together with the mind. We have this sixth sense door. Upon contact of mind, the respective consciousness come to be. So this is how we function as a human being. This is how we interact with the world, and this is how we know the world. Through our seeing consciousness, through our hearing consciousness, through our smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness. So without this sixth sense door, sixth sense consciousness, you are nothing. You don't even have any consciousness to perceive anything. That's why there is no world. Because without mind, there is nothing. Everything ceases to be. But when mind arises, everything comes to be. So all of external manifestation that you come to perceive in this universe come from consciousness. That's why you return all this external form back to mental consciousness. Then this mental consciousness has its content. Understand? The content of consciousness, these are the aggregates of mind. That's why within this content you can feel, you can perceive, you can think, you can arise emotion. You can become conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactilely think. Oh, sorry, tactilely feel and think. So because of that, this external manifestation, when you return to consciousness, you realize it is because of this content of consciousness that it becomes default, understand not? Whether the content of consciousness is wholesome or unwholesome depends on your conditioning, depends on your understanding of truth, your views and your opinion. So all this conditioning, all these views and opinion condition you to react. That's why you are not peaceful. That's why when you return to mental consciousness, this is where the problem is. This is where the five aggregate of form and mind keep on arising and passing away. This is where the dependent origination every time arise and pass away. So because of that, if you don't have the mindfulness, don't have the pure awareness, which is a higher form of mind, which is the true mind, you cannot see what is happening. You cannot understand what is happening. That's why it is this sati or pure awareness or the true mind that can see things as they are. It can see the thought, but the thought cannot see the awareness because it is from here that everything comes about. So you have to return all of mental consciousness and its content of consciousness back to pure awareness or the true mind. Then you realize this is the one that is eternally unmoving, eternally the deathless element. It was never born. That's why it will never get old, never get sick, and never die. So this is the true mind. The true mind is eternally there. The essence of mind is always there. But this is the true mind that can also take you back and connect you back to your source, the oneness nature, your true nature, or your original nature before everything comes about. And this process, you have to go through the cessation, the nibbana, the enlightenment. Otherwise, you cannot connect back. So the oneness nature is something you cannot comprehend until you have realized the enlightenment. So this is a summary. So you now look at the boxes. The boxes explain to you. First, external manifestation of mind created via mental consciousness. Then, the mundane mind is where your content of consciousness is. So you deludedly believe the knower is you. So that's why he said the knower becomes the living being. The five aggregate of form and mind. This living being is what you call the five aggregate of form and mind or human being. Then this one become like real traveler in time. That's why you create karma through all this. or your mental intention, your wrong view, you grasp and cling to the false one. So this is the one that cannot understand itself. That's why it gets itself entangled. That's why samsara is being created. Form and mind. You take birth. You are born into something. Then you die. Then you are born again and die. Endless birth and death. And you look back. Each and every birth. Which one is you? None of them are you. They are all your segmented form and mind. Conditioned by karma. So this is the part we have to meditate on. Then when we are able to realize the wisdom, we can return to pure awareness. That's why you use the silent mind, the heedful mind, in silent, pure inner awareness to cultivate. Then from there, you will realize the enlightenment. Then when you cease your mind, if you decide to explore further, that cessation can take you back to your source. That one you need to go on. You need to cultivate the Bodhisattva way to become a Samasambuddha. Otherwise, you can become Aryas or Saint. They call it the Sotapanna, the Sakadagami, the Anagami, and the Arahant. They stop here. That's why to the Mahayana, they said the Arahant, they have only stopped or end the birth and death of the segmented life, means rebirth of this karmic. But the outflow from their mind when they are still around, the mental outflow, they haven't ceased. The mundane mind is still there. But they don't have any more ignorance and delusion. That's why they are not affected. They will not condition rebirth consciousness. So it depends on your understanding and your cultivation. If you choose to cease there, it is also another way to become enlightened. That's why they end up cessation of form and mind, parinibbana. That's all, finished. There is no more Bodhisattva way for them to actually maintain the cultivation to proceed onward. So the choice is up to the individual cultivator. Okay, next page, the third one, part 3, meditation. Question 1. In meditation, usually how long would it take for the mind to settle down into stillness? So answer, it depends on the individual. If you had cultivated correctly and consistently and your wisdom and daily mindfulness are already established, then the stillness of mind can be realized relatively fast. It can happen within minutes. Sometimes the moment you sit down, you are already silent and still. But if you have not done the training and the wisdom is not established as yet, then it may not happen. And to settle down into stillness may be quite a difficult task. So it all depends. That's why if you have cultivated and stabilized your daily mindfulness, then very easy for the mind to become silent. Then for it to develop the stillness of mind. Then the second question is, what actually returned to the source? This is a very good question. A lot of people are confused. They thought it's a person who become enlightened. That's why the Heart Sutta say, there is no attainment. That's why there is no old age, sickness and death too. This is ultimate prajna. Prajna paramita. True emptiness. When you realize the profound wisdom, you come to know, really, he know you, he know me. And there is nobody to be enlightened to. Because the form and mind is not you, understand not? So you cannot say this form and mind get enlightened. Of course, conventional language you can. But it is no meaning. This is not me. The form and mind is not you. So how can you say that one, which is you, enlightened? Means you contradict yourself. It's just the mundane mind realizes itself and sees, that's it, finish. Then the formal mind, because it's connected to this nature, it has this understanding, the wisdom to protect the formal mind. That's why that formal mind doesn't make mistake anymore. It doesn't get deluded anymore. It doesn't grab, it doesn't cling. So because of that, you can say this formal mind doesn't suffer anymore. That one you can say. But it's not you. Okay, the answer is there is no one to return to the source. It is just the mundane mind that realizes itself and sees. The cessation of form and mind, which is the realization of Nibbana, is without any mind and totally without any thought or even the pure awareness or consciousness. Hence, it cannot be spoken or expressed or understood via words, knowledge, or ideas and concepts, which is still within the field of thought. The mind ceases, but you, that's why I put inverted comma, the form and mind, are not dead. And consciousness can still come back if it is still not time for parinibbana as yet. Means that form and mind, they have already realized nibbana. When the cessation occurs, when it happens, even the five aggregate, including the pure awareness, cease. No more consciousness, no more awareness, nothing. It's just cessation. You cannot talk about it. It's like, it is just like the analogy of the candlelight. When the candlelight dim off or ceases, you cannot say where did the candlelight went to in there. Can you ask that question or not? Where did that light went to? Because that light is condition arising. When condition cease to be, it cease to be, it just cease to be. Understand or not? You cannot ask this question. Where does it return to? Well, that is that the so-called light or the form of mind is just a condition arising entity, not a permanent unchanging entity, not an eternal entity. So you cannot talk about it returning to anything because it's not an atta. So that part, I hope you can understand. Okay, the third question is, Buddhist meditation talk about mental liberation and enlightenment via the Buddhist way. Can non-Buddhists also gain enlightenment or liberation of mind via meditation? This one also quite a good question. The answer is, can, because like the Buddha said, the Dhamma or truth was already there before him, and he only realized it after the enlightenment. So truth is not monopolized by Buddhism or any religion, for that matter. Whatever that can explain the way things are is the truth. Hence, truth is suchness, not your truth or my truth. For these are the individual, our own opinion of truth. So these are relative. Truth is absolute. That's why truth is suchness. So when you understand, then this truth can be realized by anybody from any religion. Not necessary you must be a Buddhist. So this part is important. The fourth question is, when meditating, is it normal that the mind may go blank for a while? This one, I think, somebody asked. The answer is the mind can go blank for a while or for quite some time, depending on the type of meditation one is doing. But it is more important for us to understand what the main purpose of bhavana or meditation is. The main purpose of meditation is to realize the wisdom that can enable us to understand clearly the Four Noble Truths so that our mind can be liberated from all the entanglements of life that can condition our mental suffering. So whatever meditative experience that can bring about this wisdom or understanding is more important than just blanking out your mind or developing the very special meditative experiences during meditation. The very special or beautiful meditative state that arise during meditation are only a conditioned state. And if it does not bring about a transformation in understanding, then it should be left as it is. That is, not to be clung on to, or perceive as equivalent to something special or a special achievement in meditation. Certain type of one-pointedness concentration and absorption meditation can bring about a state of like no thought, you totally blank, or a blank mind for a certain period of time. Like inside there, totally no thought. The calmness can be very strong, but the mind is without any awareness within. So meditation, such meditation is mainly samatha in nature, because they develop the strong, deep absorption. The mind becomes so still, it doesn't move. Then like blank out. But when they are in this state, especially in the formless rhyme, the formless jhana, they may appear to be inside there for a short while, very calm, very still, deep in absorption. But when they come out of it, it's already very, very long. Because relatively the time when you are in that state of absorption, especially the formless rhyme, that time like doesn't move. So to you it's like very short, but to our earthly time it's already very long. So sometimes for split minutes or seconds you went in, then when you come out it's already a few hours when you look at the clock. The calmness can be very strong, but the mind is without any awareness within. Such meditation is mainly samatha in nature. One will have to release the absorption or concentration to normal state of awareness to cultivate the sati sampajana or daily mindfulness with clear comprehension meditation to develop the insight or wisdom needed for enlightenment. So if you are doing those type of meditation, you need to be aware. You can maybe play with it for a while, understand it. But ultimately, if you want to develop the wisdom to free, you have to release that calmness or the absorption back to normal day-to-day awareness. Otherwise, the defilement, the anusaya, the latent tendency, they are all suppressed. The energy field inside, they are too strong. So they are suppressed. So you think you are already different. But actually, it is because of the samatha or concentration energy. Like the clear water, the Buddha said, when it's not stirred, because that energy prevents it from stirring. That type of samadhi is a conditioned state born of mind in absorption, concentration. That's why it cannot move, it cannot create thought. So you cannot be tested. So later on, when you get old, when your concentration is no longer so strong like before, when you cannot develop that type of absorption and calmness, then you realize your mind can stir. Or when you come back into the daily life, you realize when certain things happen, it can affect you, afflict you. Then you realize inside, move again. There is this fear, craving, attachment. It will come back to you. So this is where the latent tendency, the Buddha said, they are not rooted out yet. The wisdom has not been developed. So if you depend on this samatha, concentration or absorption, to hold your mind, to be peaceful, and then later on, you are not really free. Later on, when you lose this ability, your mind can still react and stir. Then sometimes, even when they still retain this, they can have sadness, especially when something happened to their loved ones, when things don't go their way. That's why they still have delusion. So that is the part you need to pay attention to. Okay, we finish the notes. You got any question or not? So far? If you don't have, then we go to the Heart Sutta and continue. I think we are at page 39. You turn to page 39. Okay, page 39. Therefore, don't be attached to it. This is a continuation from page 38. Maybe I will read the last paragraph from page 38 so that you can actually understand better. If you understand that form itself is emptiness, then you shouldn't perceive the body as me. It is only a possession. It just belongs to me. So this one we have touched on last Sunday. But here, especially, you should not be attached. If you take the attitude that the body is what I have, then you will want to help it a lot. And you will make up your mind, your body is... Sorry. Your mind. You will make up... Sorry. You will make your mind, your body's... Wow, this English is... Oh, slave. Okay. Make your mind, your body slave. Okay. Here, mind means your awakened mind. That is the difference. Which can understand that your body is a form Dhamma and therefore unreal. So, you see, the key thing is it is a form Dhamma, not what you are. That's why it's unreal. Therefore, don't be attached to it. Destroy the form skanda, and the form skanda will be empty. So we go to the Heart Sutta again. The word see that form is emptiness and feeling is the same. Feeling, which is the second aggregate of the five skanda, is like form. Oh, sorry. Here he says it's like form. It is empty. But in the analogy the Buddha used, feeling is like bubble. Bubble. The form is like foam. Appears so solid, but after a while you look at it, it is just actually empty. Because foam is like a lot of frost, like very solid. But later on, after a while, you realize it's empty. So here, see that form is emptiness. And feeling is the same. So it's just an analogy. So what the Buddha used was like a bubble. It arises and it passes away. Arises and passes away. I always use this word like pop, pop, bubble. One after another. When the bubble is created, when it arises to the surface, pop, finish, no more. So feeling is like that, moment to moment. You feel, you feel, you feel. It's actually moment to moment of consciousness or awareness of that tactile consciousness. That's why your feeling from your tactile, you can silence your mind and feel it. It's actually moment to moment. Even your seeing, I don't know how many of you have actually developed the investigation. Last time I used to look at, I put a white piece of paper, then I draw one dot there during the early years. I want to know what is seeing. Who actually see? What see? So what perception is all about? So when I put the dot there, I just relax my mind, I aware. Then I realize it's not a continuous seeing. It's a moment-to-moment awareness. Then when I am aware, that dot arise. That dot arise. But after a while, sometimes, very funny, that dot like disappear. That's why the perception is false. You cannot trust the perception. The moment the mind doesn't register, it's not there. And you must understand, our this retina, you know it retain your image for, I don't know how long, I think it's 0.01 second or what, I forgot already. For a very short interval. So, if your perception speed is such that it doesn't mesh with this retina perception, then certain perception you look, the black dot is not there. You can go and try. It's not there. So, the seeing is very funny. It's actually moment to moment of perception. It's not a continuous seeing. Because the mind can only know from moment to moment. So you can try. You can go in and try. Then you start to understand what seeing is, what perception is, what consciousness is. So all this aggregate of mind, you will start to understand them. Okay, we go on. False thoughts are the shifting current. This refers to the cognition skanda. Cognition here, they use another English word. This is what we call sankara. Perception. This is what we call perception. Cognition is perception. The perception aggregate. While formation is the arranger of karma. This one is sankara. Mental activity, your thinking, your mental intention and all those things. This is the formation of sankara skanda or mental activity skanda. Then the karma created from formation is arranged together in an orderly fashion. Here he said karma is because the mental intention is within your formation skanda or what they call mental activity skandhas. So sankara includes your mental intention, and your mental intention is responsible for what they call karma. So whatever mental intention you arise, wholesome and unwholesome, it will condition your karma accordingly. The karma created from formation is arranged together in an orderly fashion. Then with consciousness, which understand difference. So here, they take your consciousness as the one that discriminate. The consciousness skanda is fine discrimination and understanding of the difference. So the five shadow are complete. The five shadow are your form, feeling. Cognition is your perception. Formation is your sankara. And consciousness is your vijnana. Are the five skandhas, which are often represented in Chinese by the character ying, ying, shadow, ying, which literally means shadow. Mirror flower and water moon beyond defiling dust. This is from the poem. So the commentary said, the five skandhas, form, feeling, perception, activity of mind and consciousness, are like flower reflected in a mirror, and like the image of the moon on the surface of the water. No dust at all defiles them, for the five skandhas are all empty. So this is an analogy that he is trying to describe to you. Your five aggregate of form and mind, they are not real. When you see the moon reflected on the water, what do you see? Like the moon, isn't it? But this is not the moon, isn't it? You know it's a reflection, isn't it? So the five aggregate also same. When your true mind see them, you know it's a manifestation. It's not real. That's why they are like shadow, come and go, arise and pass away. They come and they go, impermanent. You grasp and cling and give meaning, suffering comes to be. And because they are impermanent, condition arising, come and go, it is not a permanent, unchanging entity where you can grasp onto, hold onto, and say, hey, this is me, this is I, these are mine. Impossible. That's why anatta, empty nature, non-self nature. So this understanding is very important. When you see clearly, no longer deluded, then you wake up to the reality. That form and mind, namarupa, the five aggregate of form and mind, they are constantly arising and passing away. They are the byproduct from the true awareness or true nature. They are not you. But they arise in you because you got this physical body form. Then you have a mind that make contact. Then this content created. That's why they are the byproduct from your what they call nature, the pure awareness. You put in the content, it becomes a thought. So this is mental consciousness and its content. That's how you arise all these five aggregate of form. So Xuanhua called them. He said, They are like flower reflected in the mirror, or like image of the moon on the surface of water. This is the analogy. No dust at all defiles them, for the five skandhas are all empty. Means consciousness, they come and they go. Okay. Emptiness, not empty, the great function of clarity. This one is when you see very clearly. When you don't understand clearly, then the five skandhas are all empty. That the five skandhas are all empty, there is affliction, you suffer, false thinking and trouble. It is just within clarity about the five skandha that you turn your consciousness around to realize wisdom. Doing just that is the especially great and wonderful function which you then understand. So it is only through wisdom or understanding, when you see them clearly, then you can turn it around. That's why Shen Hua said, it is just within clarity about the five skandhas that you turn your consciousness around to realize the wisdom. So doing just that is the especially great and wonderful function which you then understand. Vision is yet not a view. Happiness indeed means you finally understand. So true emptiness produces wonderful existence. See? Heart Sutta is always so beautiful. True emptiness is wonderful existence. Zhen Kong Miao Yu. The production of wonderful existence has a great use. Vision is yet not a view. Means that then your seeing is the same as not seeing. When you are unaffected by this kind of experience, you attain genuine happiness. Therefore the verse say, happiness indeed. When you have this true understanding of this form and mind, your wisdom is so different. You are no longer deluded. That's why you remember the story about the Zen master. This, I think one of the disciples, he was so excited, he came to this Zen master. He said, Master, Master, I just awakened, I'm enlightened. So the master said, very good. So he pointed to the table. He said, what's that? The disciple said, table. He whacked the fellow. He said, you still got table. You say you enlightened. You say you awakened. Because to the awakened one, seeing is like not seeing. Understand? Because they are not deluded anymore. Understand? Then they realize form is empty. Emptiness. Actually, when he asked him to see that one, what do you see? What do you see? The real seeing, the direct seeing. What do you see? Let's say this table. They ask you to see. What do you see? When you awaken already, you see without words. Understand or not? You see things as they are. Understand or not? Because this one, no name. No concept, nothing. Just like that. That's why seeing is like no seeing. Because there is no word. There is no concept. You see things as they are. It's consciousness. Understand not? How do you know that this is a so-called before the table? The direct seeing, the perception. It's condition arising, is it? Mental consciousness, is it? But before the labeling. That's why the direct seeing is just seeing as they are. Seeing is like no see. Because there is no one to see. There is nothing. Just like that. Thing is just the way it is. Know this, know. But the moment you arise the table, it's not you see, it's the thought come out already. Understand? Then you deluded. You don't understand what this thing is. So the mind already come out and play trick. And you some more say you awaken. That's why the awakened one, they see differently. They still see, but it's a pure seeing, a pure perception. No words, nothing. That's why in the Surangama Sutta, you remember? There is one very important verse. I don't know whether I have shared with you or not. I will write it down. This one is a very famous verse. all can see it on. Huh? What have I written? Perception of form is consciousness, whereas it's non. Non-perception is what? Huh? You have heard of this before or not? Have you all heard of this? Did I share with you all this? Never. This is the famous one they call words of wisdom from the Surangama Sutta. They finally came to realize this very important understanding. He said, perception of form is consciousness. So that's why now you come to know why the Zen master hit the student. Because he still see form. So his consciousness is still active, understand? He's still deluded. Whereas its non-perception is wisdom. That's why those that awaken, those that have wisdom and understanding, seeing is not seeing, understand? They don't see anything. Thing is just the way it is, no word, no concept, nothing. Yeah. So, whereas its non-perception means you don't see that word, that concept. That is the true seeing, the direct seeing, the pure perception. You can change this to pure perception if you want, but easier to understand when non-perception is wisdom. When you don't try to perceive anything, you just see things as they are, the pure perception or the direct seeing before the knowing, before you perceive it. Because perception means there is a perceiving already. But there can also be pure perception. Means you just aware at that moment. But the word hasn't come out yet. It just see things as they are, like a child, a newborn child. No idea, no concept of what this is, but he sees something. Understand? The baby see, really see, but he got no idea of color, shape, and form. That is the direct seeing. It just see things as they are. And because they don't have a brain, they are not conditioned. There is no words, no concept, nothing. That's why the seeing is very, very pure. That's why you look at a kid. They are not cunning at all. They are very naive. They will giggle, they will laugh. Then they like very cute. You can see them, very sincere, very cute. So that is the what they call the purity within the mind. The mind that doesn't have any cunningness, any selfishness, any concept or conditioning. It's like a simple mind. A very, very what they call sincere and simple mind. Like very naive. But there is a difference between this mind and the enlightened mind. The enlightened mind is like I explained last time, with all the conditioning, the memory, everything, yet they can see things like a child. Understand? That is a big difference. Because there is wisdom within. It's like the lotus I explained last time from the pond. It comes from the lotus pond, which is the world, a lot of duality, the mud and all those things. Yet it can stand above and it can be beyond. So it's the same for those who have this ability. So this part is very important. Okay, we finished that chapter. So now we go to the next one. Okay, today we have a lot of time. Okay. Turn to next page, page 40. The kind of suffering. Okay, here, Master Shen Hua, he threw his commentary. He is trying to explain to us the different type of suffering. So here the Theravada also have their teaching, but it's slightly different. I will explain to you all later. We go through first. The sutta say, and he crossed beyond all suffering and difficulties. Commentary, all refers to everything that is suffering and difficult suffering or difficulty. Suffering by itself is already unpleasant to endure. Add difficulty to suffering, and the suffering is even greater. Cross beyond indicate deliverance or liberation from suffering and the attainment of joy or happiness. It means liberation. Why then does the sutta simply say liberated instead of cross beyond all suffering and difficulty? You ask. Even if you illuminate the five skandhas and see that they are all empty as Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara did, you still must cultivate. Only then can you cross beyond all suffering and difficulty. So to illuminate emptiness and see it is merely to know emptiness. You must still cultivate or practice. Although you have quickly awakened to the principle, there is still the gradual work of cultivation. It's just like sometimes people say, I know. You only know at the knowledge level, but you cannot leave it. It cannot be a part of you yet. You have the understanding, but you have not developed the stability of understanding to allow you to leave it, to be a part of your nature. So this is the part, the commentary by Sernon said, there is still the gradual work of cultivation. That's why you still need to perfect it, stabilize it. If you know about emptiness but don't cultivate, means at the knowledge level, no use, then emptiness is of no use. If you understand that the principle itself is empty, you should cultivate and cross beyond suffering and difficulty. See, you understand but you cannot overcome your suffering, no use. If you want to cultivate, you yourself must actually do it. It is not just talking Zen. Hey, I have become enlightened. I have attained Anuttara Samyak Sambhohi, the utmost right and perfect enlightenment. Enlightened? How did you become enlightened? How did you do it? How was your Anuttara Samyak Sambhohi certified? It's easy to say but hard to do. Just saying it is a dhamma. But by doing it, you arrive or you realize. If you say it, you must be able to do it. If you know about the emptiness, then you should cultivate it. Understand through emptiness, then cultivate wonderful existence. So these two go hand in hand. When you understand the true prajna or true emptiness, wonderful existence will arise. The suffering and difficulty which is crossed beyond is not limited to just one kind of suffering. All kinds are included. The three kinds of suffering, the eight kind, and all the infinite kind. The three kinds of suffering are suffering in suffering itself. This one is a summary. You know what is suffering, suffering of suffering itself or not? The Pali got an equivalent term. What is the Pali term? The Theravada one. You heard of dukkha dukkata? Dukkha dukkata is explained under your that orange book. The what they call ancient path. You go and read. It's explained there. But the explanation inside there also slightly out, slightly different. Dukkha dukkata means suffering within suffering. But here Sernhua put as suffering of suffering itself. Actually, dukkha dukkata, if you truly understand, to me, I understand it differently. Dukkha dukkata means suffering within suffering. Like this suffering, your form, you got to go through old age, sickness, and death. Okay, so these are the basic suffering within your form, but your mind attach and cling. Understand? No? That's why there is suffering within suffering. Understand? Your old age sickness or disease and death is already suffering within the form. Understand? No? But when your mind attached to it, it becomes worse. That's why dukkha dukkata means double suffering, suffering within suffering. But in the text, it's different. They quote, if I'm not wrong, they quote the 8 type of suffering as dukkha dukkata. Then after that, they go to the second category. The second category is the suffering of activity of the 5 aggregate. Oh, sorry. The suffering of decay. Decay. So they put here decay. But under Theravada, they call it Sankhara Dukkata. Sankhara Dukkata. So the word Sankhara is more clear. You see, Sankhara is your mental aggregate of thinking, perception. Oh, sorry. Perception and feeling is within Sankhara also. So Sankhara Dukkata is suffering within the mind due to Sankhara. Understand? But they use this word, suffering due to change. The Theravada explains as suffering due to change. Because things are impermanent. That's why when you grasp and cling, there is this mental suffering. So the explanation there and here is different again. Here, Xuanhua explained as due to decay. Decay also change, understand? But it's not clear. But if you look at the Pali word, you will understand it differently. I will write down here. So the first one is dukkha. Dukkata. So suffering within suffering. Then you got Sankhara Dukkata. The third one, I forgot the Pali word, but something like that. Parinyana, I think. I forgot it. Pari something. Parinyana Dukkata or what? Something like that. This one, you have to go back and check the ancient path. Anybody got the book, Ancient Path? You got. You go and get it from me. I look out the actual term for you. And I tell you the page easier. So, the third type of suffering according to Xuanhua is the suffering of the activity of the 5 skandhas. So they say, due to this 5 skandhas activity, it conditions suffering. So they call that the third kind of suffering. So the 3 suffering are also called the 3 kind of feeling. The feeling of suffering, the feeling of happiness, and the feeling of neither happiness nor suffering. So this is what Theravada, they use the Vedana. The Vedana Nupassana, when you do mindfulness of feeling. Feeling has 3 types. They call it pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feeling. So this is, they try to express it the same. Okay, good. I will check the page. Okay, it's on page 43. You make a note. Page 43. Now there are 3 aspects of suffering. Suffering in its most obvious ordinary form, they call dukkha dukkata. Then there is this suffering or unsatisfactoriness of conditioned state, Sankhara Dukkata. Understand or not? Yeah? Then the third one is viparinama dukkata, suffering caused by change. Yeah. So it's the third one that they call change. Yeah? I have to maybe write it down now. So this one is viparinama. Viparinama dukkata. So you see, according to the text, they say all mental and bodily suffering such as birth, old age, sickness and death associate with people whom you don't like, unloved, dissociation with the love, not getting what one desire are the ordinary sufferings of daily life. And they call this dukkha dukkata. Means the first seven, of the first noble truth. But if you were to look deep into the word dukkha dukkata, means suffering within suffering. Suffering within suffering is actually, for those who understand, it is the suffering within your form. Like during birth, old age, sickness and death. Yeah. This one within the form, there is already suffering. Then the mind, through delusion and tanger, grabs and clings. That's why there is double suffering. Dukkha, dukkata. But when it comes to the other three, separation from loved one, when you are with people whom you don't like, when things don't go your way, this one is nothing to do with any suffering inside. It's all your mind, understand? Your attachment on it, understand? So, these three actually is sankhara dukkata. Understand? Suffering due to sankhara, mental activity. Yeah. So this suffering due to mental activity is sankhara dukkata. Yeah. So whatever that you grasp onto, whether it's your feeling, your perception, your consciousness, due to your delusion, condition, by it. So this is the one that conditions suffering within your sankhara. So the second type of suffering, sankhara dukkata, is more for the other three, understand? Separation from your possession, loved one, when you are with people whom you don't like, and when things don't go your way, your whatever expectation. When you want things your way, which is not nature's way, suffering will arise. And all these are all at mental level, sankhara. The third one, they try to explain suffering caused by change. Viparinama dukkata. So I will read on. Sankhara dukkata, unsatisfactoriness of conditioned state, is a philosophical significance. Though the word sankhara implies all things subject to cause and effect, here in the text of dukkha, the five aggregate, panchakanda, amen. They are the aggregate of form, sensation of feeling, perception, and mental formation and consciousness. They are known briefly as namarupa, the psychological physical entity. Rupa includes the physical aggregate and nama, the remaining four mind aggregate. The combination of the five constitute a sentient being, or a living being. So a being and the empirical world are both constantly changing. They come into being and pass away. All is in a wheel. Nothing escapes the inexorable, unceasing change. And because of this transitionary nature, nothing is really pleasant. There is happiness. But momentary, it flashes like a flake of snow and brings about unsatisfactoriness. This is why the Buddha, in his formulation of the Noble Truth of Dukkha, concludes with the word, In brief, the five aggregates of grasping are dukkha. So, suffering or unsatisfactoriness. Yeah? So, this is what they call the unsatisfactoriness of condition state, sankhara dukkata. But you must understand, the final summary is actually the summary of the first seven. Do you know that? Yeah? The final summary is the summary of the first seven conditions that were conditioned suffering when you don't have the wisdom under the first noble truth. So actually, if you base it on that explanation, then he is talking about the first seven, which is the same as dukkha dukkata according to him. That's why I say it's different. So this sankhara dukkata, which is suffering due to sankhara. So under the eight condition, the Buddha summarized everything. He said, in short, it is due to your delusion that condition your grasping aggregate, the five aggregate of form and mind. When you grasp onto it, suffering comes to be. So that is the final summary. Understand? So sankhara dukkata is actually grasping onto sankhara. But if really the Buddha wants to separate this suffering into three categories for you to understand easier, then the first one should be suffering within suffering, which is more towards the form, understand? As the human body. Birth, old age, sickness, and death. Whereas the other three, separation from loved ones and prized possession, this got nothing to do with the form, understand? It's not a sickness or what. The form don't feel anything, isn't it? It's just separate. So it's a mental attachment, this one. So this is sankhara, understand? Sankhara dukkata, conditioned by your mental attachment. Yeah. Whereas the first four is both, mental and physical. That's why dukkha dukkata, double suffering, understand? Suffering within the form and the mind also deludedly grabs and cling and suffer together. That's why it's dukkha dukkata, the first four. Then the next three is sankhara dukkata. Yeah. Then the last one, they explain differently again. Eh? You see, viparinama dukkata come under the category of unsatisfactoriness due to impermanence. So this one actually contradicts itself again. Because everything that brings about suffering is the result of impermanence. Because it's impermanent, you don't have the wisdom, you deludedly grasp and cling. You want it to stay forever. Yeah. Like this body, don't grow old, don't get sick, and don't die. You grasp and cling onto it. So because of that, suffering comes to be. Yeah. So viparinama dukkata, they define it as all the pleasant and happy feeling that man can experience, fading away and disappear. As the Buddha said, even the feeling that a yogi or meditator experiencing or attaining the four meditative form jhanas or absorption come under the category of viparinama dukkata because they are transient. Dukkha and subject to change. Viparinama dhamma. But the dukkha mentioned here is certainly not the pain and suffering that people in general endure. What the Buddha pointed out is that all things impermanent are unsatisfactory. They suffer change every moment. And this change brings about unsatisfactoriness. For whatever is impermanent is unsatisfactory. The Pali word is yadang nichang tam dukang. That is, there is no lasting place. But then, you see, when it comes to Nibbana, Nibbana paramang sukang, the highest peace. So Nibbana is the unconditioned, understand? So you cannot say that there is no lasting peace. There is in the unconditioned state. But here refer to the existential world. So this is how they try to explain. So in his formulation of the Four Noble Truths of Suffering, the Buddha said, in short, the five aggregates of clinging or grasping are suffering. According to his teaching, suffering cannot be separated from the five aggregates. It cannot exist independent of them. The five aggregates of grasping and suffering are the same and not two different things. So monk, what is suffering? It should be said that it is the five aggregates of grasping. So the grasping aggregate, that's why it's the final summary. So the Buddha said elsewhere, in this very body, phantom land, with its consciousness and perception, I declare are the world, its arising, its cessation, and the path that leads to the cessation of the world. Here the world means suffering, dukkha. That's why the Four Noble Truths is proclaimed. From the above, it becomes clear that to understand properly the First Noble Truth as well as the other three, it is essential to have a clear idea of the five aggregates. Pancha Khanda. That's why you must understand the five aggregate. Otherwise, very difficult. So that is the explanation by the Theravada, the ancient path. So Sun Huawan, you realize, is slightly different. He talked about the three suffering are also called the three kind of feeling. So this one, the Theravada don't include this. Therefore, the suffering of suffering itself is the feeling of suffering, and the suffering of decay is the feeling of happiness. You should try to refute this by thinking that happiness is not caught up in suffering, because happiness can go bad. Happiness going bad is the suffering of decay due to change. The suffering of activity of the five khandhas refers to feelings which are neither happy nor unhappy. That one doesn't hold any interest either. You see, there is a difference between indifference and upeka. Upeka is equanimity. Indifference is with delusion, understand? Especially when it's something not connected to you. Like your neighbor, I used to give you this example. Bought a new car. First day, the wife drive reverse accident. To the neighbor is something very, very unhappy. So the husband will be very unhappy because it's a new car. He haven't really test drive or use it. Already accident. So because he think he own. So he is afflicted. Okay? Whereas the neighbor doesn't pay any money. Understand? So it doesn't affect him. So he is indifferent to what happened. As far as the car is concerned, he can laugh. Understand? He can even go in and tell his wife, hey, our neighbor Sui just bought a new car. Bang, accident. You see, one party can laugh because he's indifferent to what happened. The other one, he cling. He think he own because he paid money for it. So because of that, he has a lot of affliction, sadness, unhappiness. So when you are indifferent means you don't care because nothing to do with you. So indifferent, you don't want to act. And this one still got delusion. Whereas equanimity is different. Equanimity, the mind is with wisdom, not affected, not reactive. There is no positive or negative. The mind is in equanimity. Means at the moment of sense experience, whatever you see, you hear, you think, or smell, taste, tactile, whatever, the mind is in the state of equanimity, upeka, not affected. There is no like or dislike, no happiness or sorrow, no anger and unhappiness or whatever. The mind understands things as they are, through wisdom. And that is upeka. That is what the mind with samadhi and wisdom is all about. So it understands. Then when it understands, it acts without delusion. Whereas the one with indifferent got delusion one. They can still laugh, joke, or say something. So indifferent, that's why Shen Hua say, because that one doesn't hold any interest either, he said, because the suffering or activity of the five skandha refer to feeling which is neither happy or unhappy. Means this neutral feeling. So to them is indifferent. Does she need help? No need, you can manage. Okay. If you need help, let us know. Somebody will help her, because it's quite a distance to the washroom. Okay. There is one more type of suffering which was not mentioned here. Maybe I just share with you all. I every time got a feeling that the third type of suffering, viparinama, is actually another type of suffering, which only those who has gone through the cultivation understand. When the mind reaches a very fine, what they call, level of training, when the mind becomes so sensitive, there is a type of suffering, very fine, very, very fine type of suffering. The suffering that arises at every moment of sense experience, every moment, every instant, every moment of perception, every moment of feeling, every moment of activity of mind when you try to think, or every moment of consciousness, even to arise, the aggregate. That's why the five aggregates are called aggregate, because like the Buddha said, they are like one heap, one heap, one heap. And you can actually detect them. That's why the mind can detect them. You can be at the moment of feeling, at the moment of thinking, at the moment of perception, at the moment of consciousness, and at the moment of what they call awareness of the form. So all this, the moment you are aware, the moment you are sort of trying to feel or perceiving or even arise the thought, sankhara, the movement, the intention, that mind is so sensitive, the suffering, the fine suffering within that form and mind can feel it. That's why during that time, being who can do that, they are very near to enlightenment already. Very near. Because their mind is so sensitive that they will come to an understanding that think also like that, don't think also like that. Then the mind, like through wisdom, can tell you, if you want to suffer, you go and arise your consciousness. You go and think, you go and perceive, you go and feel, you go and do things with your mundane mind. So that very sensitive type of suffering, to me, is the third category of suffering. So after dukkha dukkata, sankhara dukkata, then you have this very fine suffering, which is also part of sankhara, but at a very fine level. So I all the time suspect this viparinama is that type of suffering. But I think the book, the sutta, they have forgotten about this type of suffering. That's why it was never explained. So anyway, this is my personal understanding. You don't have to accept it. You find out yourself. So the three types of suffering is a way to explain to you, which is in a way quite useful if you understand. But to me, it's more academic. More academic. As long as your mind is affected, not peaceful, unhappy, then suffering is there. Evil roots are there. So a mind that has wisdom and understanding is always at peace, in harmony, with a lot of joy, understanding. So that type of mind is different. There is a lot of equanimity, enlightenment factor within. Sati is always there. And this sati has this, what they call, capability to investigate into the Dhamma, which is the second factor of enlightenment. Then it has this virya, very strong within. Then it can have the piti, pasati, then the samadhi. Then the last one is upeka, bono, wisdom. The seven factors of enlightenment are always there. Okay, we go on. The first four of the eight kinds of suffering, this one talk about the first noble truth, our first noble truth of dukkha. The suffering of birth, the suffering of old age, sickness and death. Who isn't born? At the moment of birth you suffer, and who can prevent old age? Yet one might say a child dies before it has a chance to grow old, since it did not get old. it basically didn't have any awareness. However, even though it wasn't old, it still suffers sickness and death. And one could also say that it suffered growing old for the day it died. It was old. This one is all not so important. Eh? If it had not become old, how could it have died? Because it died, one can only say the child changed to become old and endure the suffering of old age, even though its life did not bear fruit. Who dare to say that sickness is not suffering? Sickness is especially bitter suffering. Even when one who has become enlightened gets sick, he still suffers in the same way. For example, Sakyamuni suffered from the retribution of the metal spear and the retribution of the horse feet. Why did he have to undergo those retributions? When Sakyamuni Buddha was a child on the coarser ground of a former life, he lived in a place where the populace was suffering or starving. Sorry. One day, the starving people pull a great fish up from the sea to the shore. Before they have a chance to eat it, the child who was to be Sakyamuni Buddha picked up a big stick, approached the fish, and hit it on the head several times. Even after he realized Buddhahood, Sakyamuni Buddha's head often hurt as if it were pricked with a spear. This was the retribution of the metal spear. You see, he may experience that consciousness, but his mind is free. He doesn't suffer. Mental suffering is not there. But these are karmic retribution which you cannot avoid. It will arise. Then on the coarser ground of a former life, Sakyamuni Buddha spoke wrongly to the cultivator of the way. He said to the cultivator, "Your cultivation is still lacking in sufficient ascetic practice. If you were really cultivating, you would be eating horse feet." After Sakyamuni Buddha attained Buddhahood, he was invited to a certain country to dwell in peaceful retreat for the summer. But the king didn't make offering to him and only gave him and his bhikkhu, the Buddhist monk who were his disciple, horse feet to eat. This was the horse feet retribution. The karma which you create on the coarser ground must be undergone as retribution on the ground which is its fruition. You see, this part is different from the Theravada. The Theravada one is slightly different. This horse feet thing, according to Theravada, before he about to die, the Buddha, he was offered one last dana or offering. Then he knew he has to eat because of karmic retribution. But this food is actually the tradition food of that people there who make their offering. It's supposed to be a very special type of food. But it's actually like a type of horse feet. And he knew it's coming. He eat already, he will feel very, very bad in his stomach. And he really has to go through that retribution because the Buddha knew there was one life. Like this one. He actually, according to this, he actually said something to this cultivator. I think this cultivator, if I'm not wrong, was a particular Buddha. He didn't know at that time. So because of that, the retribution came because there was condition. So after he ate, he told Ananda and the other disciple because they all wanted to actually take revenge on his behalf and reprimand or what they call deal with the person who make the offering. The Buddha told them no, he said he did it out of sincerity. He doesn't intentionally want to make it difficult for him. Then the Buddha explained, the one that offer the mock rice, Sujata, before he became enlightened, and the one that offered the last meal to him before he parinibbana. These two, the merits are very high. Whatever they aspire, they get it. So because of that, the disciple came to know. So this part is slightly different from the Theravada. And the Theravada are more authentic when it comes to this, because they are more towards the original teaching. That's why they call it the orthodox teaching. I realize when it comes to Mahayana, a lot of things run a little bit. But the Mahayana are very good. The important Dhamma are there. Then they expand on it. They move on. So there are pro and con. That's why you must have your understanding to read clearly and understand clearly to see the difference. So this part is just like to explain to you the history behind. Okay, we go on. After the suffering of birth, old age, sickness and death comes the suffering of death. Death, nobody welcomes it. Why? Probably because it is suffering. Then the second four of the eight types of suffering are suffering of being apart from those whom you love. Means separation from loved one. Actually, it includes your possession too. Here he put only those you love. Actually, it includes your prized possession, your wealth, your whatever possession that you hold on to dearly. Then there is the suffering of being together with people whom you don't like. The suffering of not able to get what you want, not obtaining what you seek or what you want. Then the final summary is the suffering of the flourishing of the five aggregates. Means, in short, when you grasp and cling to the five aggregate of dukkha, suffering comes to be. Because they are all those suffering, the sutta say all suffering. So by cultivating, it is possible to avoid the three kinds of suffering or the eight type of suffering that the Buddha spoke on the first noble truth. And all the infinite kind of suffering. That is what the sutta mean by cross beyond all suffering and difficulty. So Xuanhua has written a verse about it. Across the suffering sea or sea of suffering, one leaves the revolving wheel. The rain disperses, the heaven clear. Just then, the moon is fully bright. This one is, what word is this? The Qian, what is this? The Qian source is the way substance. What is the Mandarin word? I don't know this word. Among people, the sage, his undecaying golden body is rare in the world. Cast of life. What need of 1,000-year drugs? Attain extinction. Why wait 10,000 kapas? Five dwelling end. The two death disappear forever. Roam at will from east to west throughout the Dhamma Rai. Maybe this one we will leave it to next Sunday, next lesson. You go back and read it out, then we will discuss it. Okay, we actually exceeded by 15 minutes. It's already 4:45. We stop here. Do you all have any question? If you don't have, then we take a 5-minute break. Then after that, we continue with the meditation. Okay. I think we can start the meditation. Okay, start up. So now we will do the usual meditation. So for those who still need instruction, I will give you some instruction. For those who really know how to meditate, you can start immediately. Yeah, somebody off the light. Yeah, thank you. Okay, you just relax your body and mind. If you are on a sitting posture, then you make sure your body and your mind is relaxed. Backbone straight. Then you close your eye. Then you silence your mind. Then you maintain awareness at your forehead. You just feel your forehead, feel. Do not think, feel. If there is any tension, any tightness, or any stress within, you just silently relax, relax, and relax them. Then you move your attention to your facial muscle. Again, you feel your facial muscle. Then you relax them all. If there is any tension, any tightness, or any stress within, you just relax, relax, and relax them all. Then you feel your facial muscle. Normally after a tired day, you are quite tired. So you feel your facial muscle, relax them all. Every part of it, feel it soothingly relax. You have problem relaxing, then you try to radiate a radiant smile. Visualize yourself facing a mirror, smiling radiantly back to you. When you can smile, there's a lot of joy in you. The joy will allow you to relax. Then naturally, you will feel your facial muscle relax. Then you have this, what they call, metta or loving kindness within you. You silently recite, may I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness within your form and mind, your entire body, your entire what they call cells, all of your cells and tissue within, each and every one of it. Feel it. Feel the well-being and happiness within. Then you also can radiate this metta. May this body and mind of mine to be free from all danger, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May too be free from all negative emotion like fear, worry, anxiety, enmity, unhappiness. Then may this body and mind of mine always be calm and peaceful. May there be joy, may there be love, and may there be peace throughout. Then you can radiate this metta to your loved ones, to somebody that you love, you care for, your loved ones. May my loved ones to be well and happy, well and happy. Radiate this metta to them. Visualize them and radiate from your heart the well-being and happiness to them. May they all to be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May they also be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May they also be free from all danger. May there be peace, may there be joy, and may there be happiness always. Then you can radiate the same metta to all beings. May all beings within this vicinity, known and unknown, seen and unseen, including all our Kayanamitas, may they all too be well and happy, well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness and radiate to them all. May they all too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May their mind too be free of all fear, worry, anxiety, and negative emotion, free of all envy and jealousy too. Then may they all too be free from all danger. May no harm come to them. May they have peace, may they have joy, and may they have love always. Then you can share this, what they call metta, with all the sentient beings throughout the entire existence. May all beings throughout the entire universe or existence all to be well and happy, well and happy, without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they too be well and happy, peaceful and calm always. May they be free from all suffering too. both physical and mental suffering. May they too be free from all danger. May they all have love, peace, and joy always. Yeah. Then after that, you can come back to your facial muscle. Just silence your mind, relax every part, then feel. Feel your neck, relax, feel your shoulder, relax, feel your hand, back to shoulder, relax. Then you feel your heart or your chest area. This is a very important location within your body. This is where your heartbeat is, your mind base is, your seat of consciousness is. This is also the location where the life force arises and passes away. So you just silence your mind and feel your heart. You can detect any vibration or heartbeat. You just silence your mind and stay there. Yeah. Anchor your awareness there and just silence, relax every part. Yeah. If you are still not able to do that because you have yet to develop the sati, then you just feel and relax every part of your chest or heart area. Then you move down to your stomach, relax, abdomen, relax, buttock, relax, then your leg, relax. Then you reverse the whole cycle, leg, buttock, relax, abdomen, relax, stomach, relax, then feel your heart and relax. You just feel and relax, don't think. Continue this exercise so that the mind sweeping method will strengthen your mind to allow your mind to be at the location you want it to be. Then you relax your shoulder, hand, back to shoulder, neck, then your facial muscle, do the same. After you have relaxed all of your facial muscle, then you relax your eye muscle, your forehead. By now, your mind should be more calm and more peaceful. So you just silence your mind and train this mind to develop the anapanasati or mindfulness of in and out breath. Like you feel your forehead, you just feel your nostril, the breathing there. Then like the Buddha said, breathing in, you are aware. Breathing out, you are aware. You just relax your awareness in front of your nostril. The key to meditation is relax, aware, feel, don't think. Then when you detect your breath, you allow this movement of mind and breath as one. Breathing in, you are aware. And breathing out, you are aware. So this awareness will anchor your mind to your breathing, which is always in the moment. But for those who are not familiar, the mind tend to wander off very fast. The mind think a lot, heedless. So because of that, you must patiently bring this mind back, then anchor it to the breathing. Train yourself in anapanasati until this mind become very quiet and very stable. Then like the Buddha said, breathing in, you're not only aware, you are experiencing the whole bodily formation. Breathing out, experiencing the whole bodily formation means the entire body, the vibration and the calmness. Then later on you can continue with breathing in, experiencing piti or joy, the spiritual joy. Then breathing out, experiencing piti. So all this mind state will arise. So you continue to train your mind until this mind is very calm, very peaceful and very mindful. Then from there on, you can silence your mind. Then you can anchor it either to your breathing or to your heart. Then you use it to meditate, to understand what is going on within the sitting session. You will come to understand all the Dhamma that the Buddha talked about. How the mind functions, how it arises and passes away, how the dependent origination condition each of the link. Then how the Four Noble Truths can be experienced within this form and mind of ours. All this you will come to understand. Then how the sense contact arises consciousness, and how when the consciousness comes to be, how the mind gets itself entangled by it. how it actually grabs and cling on to it, arising all the reaction of mind. So all this you will come to experience and understand them through the sati or mindfulness that you have developed. So you continue. I will allow you to develop the meditation on your own. Then maybe in about 10 to 15 minutes, I will ring the bell. Okay. relax yourself, huh? Try to maintain whatever calmness, inner awareness and peace that you have developed, huh? Try to maintain them for as long as you can. You need to develop this trained mind in sati to develop the apamada or heedfulness. So heedfulness is the ever mindful silent mind to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path and the Four Foundation of mindfulness, or to develop the wisdom through the understanding of the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. So apamada is very useful. Apamada is heedfulness. So the Buddha always reminded the monk. He said, if you do not train your mind to be heedful, then if you are heedless, you are as if dead. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful never die, the heedless are as if dead. So this is a very important Dhammapada verse 21. So in order to become enlightened, you must have this quality of mind, apamada or heedfulness. And to have heedfulness, you must train your mind to be mindful, constantly aware. So a mind that is constantly aware to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha is having heedfulness, apamada. So this is what you need to know. Then when you can use this heedfulness to cultivate in your daily life, the daily mindfulness will be the real meditation. Then life itself becomes the meditation. Then everything that you come to experience in life can become like your teacher. You can make use of it to develop the wisdom and the understanding. Okay, now we'll open up for question and answer and also reporting, meditation reporting. You can report to me your meditation and you can ask me any question that you might want to with regards to the meditation, the teaching of the Buddha, or how you can apply what you have learned from here and the Buddha Dharma to help you to understand life, to help you overcome all of your life problem or suffering. Okay, anybody wants to report? Yeah, Stephen, pass the mic to him. Thanks, Stephen.
Now I've got a question, brother.
Right,
as we all know,
yes,
right, the right understanding and right view is very essential.
Yes, very, very important. Right.
So question is, if a person who hasn't got the right understanding and right view for a start, right, how could the person progress in his practice of Dharma?
Okay, very good question. This is a very important question. You look at the Noble Eightfold Path that the Buddha teach. The fourth noble truth, the Buddha explained very clearly, is it? There is this noble truth that talks about the path that leads to the cessation of all suffering, namely the Noble Eightfold Path, the Buddha said. If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the cessation of all suffering. And the Buddha, when he started to teach this Noble Eightfold Path, he started with the first power factor, samadhiti. This is very important. Samadhiti, dhiti is view, or right understanding. If you don't have right understanding and right view, you cannot start. The reason being, you ask yourself, if your views are wrong, if you don't have the right understanding with regards to the truth that governs all of life and existence, means the nature's law or the nature's truth that governs all of life and existence, there is no way you will understand what life is. There is no way you will know how to develop the meditation, the Noble Eightfold Path. So right view is most important, paramount. That's why the Buddha put it as the first path factor. So today we will discuss this. This is very important. You all should thank Stephen for asking this question. Because without this, you cannot start. So what is right view? You have to question and inquire deep into it. Right view with regards to what? You all try to develop the understanding. What is the understanding? Right view with regards to what? Regards to what? Right view or right understanding? This is considering all the truth that you need to understand. Because when you live life in this universe or in this planet of ours, what do you have to understand so that you can understand what life is? The truth is there. Correct or not? If you don't understand the truth, means you don't have right view. Correct or not? What is the truth? Anything that can explain the way things are is the truth, isn't it? So all of the laws that governs your life and all of existence . So these are the ones that you need to understand, the law that governs your life and all of existence. So these are the nature's law that governs your life and existence. So the Buddha are more interested in the spiritual law. So what are the three important spiritual laws? Law of karma. This is the first one, most important one. So if you don't understand this law, you cannot start. The second one is what? The essence of the Buddha's teaching is what? The Four Noble Truths. So these are the truth that explain to you what suffering is, the cause behind, then the cessation, the possibility of cessation of dukkha or enlightenment, then the path that leads to the cessation. The third one is how your mind functions, the 12 links, or law of dependent origination. So these three right view you must have. Without these three, you cannot start. So the Buddha said, if you don't have right view with regards to the law of karma, you cannot cultivate. You will never understand what the truth is, the Dhamma is, because you will be deluded. Deluded in the sense that you do not understand how the nature's law actually affect your life. So this law of karma is something like Newton's law. When Newton discovered his third law of action and reaction. Is that not? To every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. This is a physical law. Like I explained, this table or this floor, you can hit. You can get angry with it and hit. The harder you hit, the more painful you will suffer. Understand now? Because cause and effect. So, in the mental state or in the spiritual field, it's the same. When you hit out using your mental thought process, your evil roots, your evil thought, the harder you hit, it will bounce back stronger. That's why the Buddha explained this law. Law of karma, is it? You reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. Then each and every one of us, this is very important, we are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma. So if you don't have this right view, you don't know how to live. You don't know the importance of karma. You don't know how to train your mind to be heedful, to take care of karma. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path very powerful. Once you have this right view with regards to this law of karma, you know karma is so important. You are born of it, had to it, conditioned and supported by it. And you are what you are because of it. You cannot blame anybody for your life situation and condition. So you know karma is responsible. So how can you have the good life, the happy life? Means you must take care of karma, isn't it? So that your karmic inheritance, this is what you inherit. So this is the one that you are born of it. This is the one that support you and condition you every moment, every instant. And this is the one that you inherit all of your good and your bad. So if you want to have the good life, the happy life, you must take care of karma. So how to take care of karma? Eh? You must avoid all evil, right? Do good, right? Follow the advice of the Buddha, right? Then you must purify your mind to develop the wisdom to have this right view, to understand the laws that governs life and existence. And then you know how to live. That's why from this first power factor of right view, you will know how to follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil by keeping to the precept. How do you keep your precepts? You have to avoid all evil through training your mind to be mindful, ever mindful, heedful of your mental intention behind all your action, speech and thought process. So that's why the next three power factor is right thought, right speech and right action. So you ask yourself very simple, without this right view, how can you arise the right thought? Because you don't know what karma is, you don't know what the three evil roots are, how they condition you into negativity, how they condition your evil karma, how it brings about suffering to you following Dhammapada verse 1. All this, if you don't cultivate and investigate and realize the truth, then understand this right view, you will not change. You will not believe in karma. You will continue to believe that it is advantageous to cheat, to kill, and to deceive so that you can gain the so-called advantage. Understand? There's a lot of human beings do not believe in all this wrong action and speech or the five precepts. They want to go the shortcut way. They think they can get what they want through deceive, cheat, and all those negative way of doing things. So all this will lead us back to this very important understanding. If your views are wrong, you don't know how to act, then it will condition your wrong thought, correct or not? Based on your views of things, you will act accordingly there. If you believe that this is the law, then you will act accordingly there. So if you don't have the right view, your thought that arises that condition you into action and speech is all wrong. Understand? So that's why right view condition right thought. Right thought condition right speech and right action. Because the basis of action and speech is what? The mental intention behind your thought. Understand? Before you speak, there's a mental intention behind your thought. If your thought is based on wrong thought, then it will condition the wrong speech and wrong action. So the whole Noble Eightfold Path will collapse. That's why without right view, you can never have the right thought to condition the right speech and the right action and the right livelihood. Then your right effort, everything also go haywire. Understand that? Then because you don't have right view, you will not understand what is right mindfulness. That's why you develop the wrong meditation. You don't even understand what sati is. Then when you don't have the right understanding of what right view is, your sati and samadhi also collapse because they will be something else because of your wrong view and wrong understanding of the teaching. So when you have this right view, it will pave the way for you to develop the right understanding, to cultivate, to train your mind, to develop the mindfulness, to see clearly your mental intention behind each and every thought that you arise. Each and every mental intention behind your action and your speech and the way you live your life. That is how the cultivation unfolds. Then you will have the right effort to abandon the wrong thought that has arisen. the wrong speech and wrong action that you has already arisen that has created so much suffering, not only to yourself but also to others. So right view and right thought that condition the right speech and right action are so important. That's why right view is very, very important. Without it, you cannot start. Then the second right view is also very important. The Buddha teach the Four Noble Truths, the essence of his teaching. All of his teaching spring of what they call spring off from here. You can go and check whatever teaching that the Buddha teach. It comes from this Four Noble Truths. It branch from here. Because this Four Noble Truths summarize to you all of life, the secret of life, both the conditioned and the unconditioned. The First Noble Truth talk about the realities of life and existence. Whatever you do in life, the First Noble Truth covers everything because it talks about the realities of life and existence that you are going to experience. So it covers all the eight conditions. So when you have what they call birth, old age, sickness and death, all of human existence is covered. Understand not? Then you have the relationship thing, separation from your loved one, your possession, all things. So whatever that you have relationship with is all under this one. Then when you are with people whom you don't like, it's also another aspect of living, relationship. Then the next one is when you cannot get what you want. This one is your desire, your craving, everything else that you do in life. So not able to get what you want means you don't have the right view to accept the reality of the moment. You have this craving or desire to want things your way. But nature has its law. Understand? The nature's law governs everything. Everything is just the way it is, following nature's law. You cannot argue with nature. If you set the condition like that, things will be like that. Understand? It will unfold this way. If you want to change, you have to change the condition behind. So whatever that is past is already gone. Future yet to come, not a reality. The moment is the only reality. But this moment can never arise if there is no set condition behind. Understand that? So the condition behind is the one that defines what will happen now. That's why if you want your future to be taken care of, you must plan the condition now. You must input the condition now. So every moment of awareness, every moment of consciousness, you must have the Noble Eightfold Path, the right view that lead to the right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness and samadhi, to condition your wholesome thought, wholesome action and wholesome speech and the way you live your life. So when these are taken care of, your karma is taken care of. Understand? So those who live by the Noble Eightfold Path, they are very, very wholesome, very noble, very wise. That's why their karma are all perfect, well taken care of. So this is the inheritance that they will have. That's why they will become enlightened. Their life will transform. They will be free from all suffering. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is very powerful. This is the wisdom that you need to develop all the right action, right speech and right thought to allow you to live the noble life, the happy life. So without Noble Eightfold Path, you don't know how to act. You don't know how to live. So if you were to look at the Noble Eightfold Path, you check again. How can a person live life if they don't have this Noble Eightfold Path? Each and every other path factor, I went into it very deeply 20, 30 years ago. I tried to investigate why is this Noble Eightfold Path so powerful, so important. Then I came to realize all religion, they have most of the Noble Eightfold Path factor. In fact, 7 out of 8 they got. But there is one thing always missing in their teaching. You know which one? Which path factor? Which one? of the Noble Eightfold Path, right, which one other religion don't have one? Most religion are mindfulness. Most religion teach you how to do good, isn't it? Correct? Avoid evil, isn't it? That's why you have right thought, right speech, right action. Every religion has. Then some religion also teach you about the right way to act, which is a type of view, but may not be the right view. Understand? Not? Then they also have what they call meditation. They also have right effort to avoid evil, to do good. Then they also have right effort to develop the meditation. But the meditation is always towards concentration, absorption, samatha. They never have I heard of any religion that actually teach mindfulness. I mean the established religion. The only people are the new order type of religious teacher, like Krishnamurti, like Eckhart Tolle, and even some of these Bhayankhetiya, they talk about present moment awareness. They talk about an awareness which is equivalent to the Buddha's understanding of mindfulness, mind in fullness without thought, the silent mind. So this is the power factor that differentiate the Buddhist or the Buddha's right understanding against all other religion. Then I realize if you don't have right view with regards to the law that governs life and existence, you cannot even start to live your life. Because you don't even know like the rules of the game, understand not? When you play chess, you must know the rules of the game, what can do, what cannot do, how can you move all the chessboard, all those that you are allowed to move. Means this one follow that law, understand, the rules of the game. So our existence, our life in this universe, they have their universal law, nature's law that governs all of life. These are the things you can do, these are the things you cannot do. If you violate, it hit you back. So it's like quite similar in a sense. That's why you must have this right understanding that you can move. Otherwise, you cannot move. Then I realized, to live life, you need to arise the thought process, isn't it? You need to have thought, isn't it? You need to think, isn't it? And you need to arise understanding and all those things. So, without thought, you cannot live. So, how to use thought is very important. That's why the Buddha talked about right thought and wrong thought. Understand not? So, I already explained to you. Most people never explain to you, even Buddhists. You go and ask around. You ask them what is right thought. What is the usual answer? The four Brahma Vihara. They will tell you metta, karuna, mudita, and upeka. Loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. These four things they always say is right thought. But the book talk about this. But actually right thought is more than this. A lot more than this. What is more important is wrong thought. And never have I heard anybody explain what wrong thought is yet. Wrong thoughts are thoughts that will condition your suffering, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your selfishness, your emotional negativity, your sorrow, lamentation, your unhappiness, even depression. All these are wrong thoughts. So, like the Buddha said, thought is like a tool for you to use, understand? To live life, to experience all of life, understand? So, like the Heart Sutra said, when you understand the profound prajna paramita, means the perfection of wisdom, you understand true emptiness, then life, existence become wonderful. So, exactly the same. When you know how to use thought appropriately, then life become wonderful, life become meaningful, understand? So you must arise the appropriate right thought. Right thought bring about what? Love, joy, harmony, peace, understand? Right understanding. So all this wholesomeness, the good karma, the good mental intention, the virtue, the kindness, the pleasantness, the gentleness, the gratitude, the honesty, the sincerity, all of the virtue that can bring about goodness, understanding, and the noble life and the happy life, they are your right thought. Understand? So Right thought is a very important aspect of living. If you don't know how to cultivate this right thought, you don't know how to live. That's why thought condition action and speech. If your thought is wrong, your mental intention is wrong, you got angry thought, you will speak harshly, angrily. Understand that? You got wrong thought, you will become selfish. You will become very emotional. Then you will become very evil. So all this will condition your wrong action. So that's why in life, you need to arise a thought to live life, to experience life, to do what you have to do in life. Then you have to communicate through speech. Then you have to act through action. So all this is part of the Noble Eightfold Path. That's why you have to have this all in accordance with the right view or right understanding that will condition your right action, right speech, and right thought process. Then you know how to live. That's why there is right livelihood. You will not do the wrong thing. That you must have right effort to correct yourself, to improve yourself, to bring about the progress in meditation, the transformation, for you to become enlightened, to be free from all suffering. Then you must have mindfulness to meditate, to see the truth, to see things as they are. That's why all these are important path factors. Then you must have this stability of mindfulness that accumulate into samadhi, the unwavering mind, the collected mind, so that your mind is always have this clarity to see things as they are, not clouded with the thought, with the fear, with the worry, with the anxiety, so that your mind is always at peace, silent, with the clarity to see things as they are, to understand the truth, to awaken to the universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self. And this is what the Noble Eightfold Path, if you understand it correctly, you will know how to develop and cultivate it accordingly. So this is why right view is so important. That's why it's a very good question by Stephen. Yes.
Okay, you've answered the first part of my question. The second part. Now, so a person who has the wrong view or do not have the right view will be on the wrong path.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now, so for that person to get on the right path, does he or she has to wait for the right conditions to arise?
In a way, you need to have the condition to actually experience all of this, what they call right understanding, to flower. That's why the Buddha teaches us to make aspiration. You remember? After you have your Dhamma session, or whatever you have done, your goodness, your kindness, finally we share merit, transfer merits, then we make aspiration. What is the aspiration you make? Itmina punyang kamina mami pala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya. The meaning is, by the power of all these merits that we have cultivated, may it arise the causes and conditions for us to always, the word is always, avoid the foolish, meet up with the wise and the enlightened one, so that nibbana can be realized as soon as possible. This is one aspect for you to have that condition through your aspiration by the power of merits. The other one is the Buddha teaches you to take refuge. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Then you repeat. Dutiyampi. Buddhang saranang gacchami. To the Buddha, I go for my refuge. Then you repeat. Third time. Tatiyampi. Then again. Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha, you take refuge. The purpose of refuge is, you understand that this is refuge safe. This is the only refuge where the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha can give you the teaching. Without this triple gem, the teaching cannot come about. So this is the reason why you take refuge, so that you create karmic affinity with this triple gem. Whenever you arise in whatever civilization, whatever period of time or world system, wherever there is the triple gem, the Buddha Dhamma or the Sangha, you will connect because you have taken refuge. Understand now? If you have not taken refuge, you cannot connect Because there is simply no condition for you to connect. That's why those who chant the Buddha's name, Amitabha Buddha, Guan Yin Bodhisattva, or all the great Bodhisattva's name, even Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Pho, you connect. And the Buddha's way is actually one of the best. He not only connect to one specific Buddhas, he asks you to take refuge with all Buddhas, understand that? All Dhamma and all Sangha, enlightened disciple of all the Buddhas. So it's not Sakyamuni Buddha. That's why he never say Buddhang Saranang Sakyamuni Buddha, understand that? He said Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Yeah. Means to the Buddha, I go for refuge. He never say Sakyamuni Buddha, I go for refuge. No. To the Buddha, you go for refuge. To the Dhamma, you go for refuge. So a lot of people fail to understand. They say, Theravada never depend on Buddha. They never chant the Buddha's name. It's not they never chant. You don't understand the refuge. The meaning of refuge is so deep. And Sakyamuni Buddha, because he cultivated the wisdom way, he realized the enlightenment to be a Sammasambuddha very fast. It only took him the shortest, 4 asaṅkhaya kappa, about 3 3/4, less than 4. The one that use virya take 8. The one that use faith or sadha like Amitabha take 12 world cycle. That's why it's very long. So that's why Amitabha can have pure land, the Western paradise. Then this Buddha want you to actually chant their 4 how they say the Buddha's name. Or the mantra or whatever, because they have made this very heavy bodhisattva vow, and they know if you chant with sincerity, you will connect, the affinity will bring you to that vow. And that vow, they have this great wisdom and virtue, they are able to perfect that vow until it becomes a nature's law. You know what is nature's law? It operates by itself. It doesn't need the Buddha to be there. That's why a lot of people ask this type of question last time they used to ask me. They say, you think Kuan Yin got time? You think Amitabha Buddha got time? The whole world is full of this being chanting and chanting. How can they be everywhere? I told them they don't have to be everywhere, because the vow has become a nature's law. They make such vow. They say, whoever, whomsoever, chant with sincerity, they will connect. And this vow will take its effect through nature's law. That's why it can happen. That's why there are a lot of living proof of how Kuan Yin saved their life. Even this life, Kuan Yin came to me twice. You may think it's a joke, but it really happened. It really happened. And you can know how it come. And it's so funny. It's like they can be everywhere. It's not they are everywhere. It's the wisdom and the virtue that they have through their cultivation, their perfection. They are able to make this into a nature's law, so that their vow is so powerful, it will act automatically. They don't have to be there. So all this affinity depends. If you understand the Buddha's way of teaching, Sakyamuni Buddha, then you know how to connect. That's why he teach in a very precise and direct manner. He teach you to take refuge, then he teach you to make aspiration so that you don't deviate, understand? So that this right view will not go wrong. If you don't make aspiration, I tell you, this Noble Eightfold Path is very difficult to understand, because any slight deviation, you are out, understand? Especially the right view. This right view is very difficult to understand, I tell you. The law of karma at least is not so difficult. But the 4 noble truths and the 12 links, the dependent, I tell you, a lot of interpretation, even under the 4 noble truths, Noble Eightfold Path. The 4 foundation of mindfulness, you know how many people argue over that? What is the tea also they argue? How to explain the 4 foundation of mindfulness, the meditation or... They argue. They go into method and technique. They talk about vipassana. They talk about samatha. They talk about breathing. Anapanasati. Then they talk about the kasina. How to meditate with the 40 meditation object and all those things. So all this is so easy to debate. That's why you must make aspiration. That aspiration, when you do it sincerely, it will bring forth the way. Then you won't go wrong, understand? That's why adhittana, or what they call aspiration, making vow or aspiration, is one of the 10 perfections of the Buddha, to be a Buddha. You must know how to make use of this quality, this perfection, adhittana they call. Yeah. Determination, yeah? Or aspiration. Yeah. Means adhittana, they call adhittana. Adhittana. You must make affirmation. Yeah. So by the power of truth also you can make affirmation. By the power of merits also you can make affirmation. Yeah. So this is what the Buddha teach. You must make aspiration, adhittana, affirmation. Then your cultivation will be channeled correctly to realize the causes and conditions or affinity for you to encounter the wise and the enlightened one that can guide you. Otherwise, this teaching is very difficult to come by. Very, very difficult to come by. And you can get lost. That's why when you really understand, you will follow the Buddha's advice to make aspiration, to take refuge, so that you won't get lost, so that you are very sure, understand? That's why you now understand why the Pure Land, Amitabha Buddha, Kuan Yin, they want their disciple to chant their name, to have faith in what they teach, and to develop the affinity to connect to them. So when your vow harmonize or synchronize with them, in Mandarin they call xiang ying. You understand this word? Xiang ying. When your vow and Amitabha or Kuan Yin Bodhisattva or Pu Xian, when they merge, they synchronize, then it manifests. Then it has its effect. So this is how the right view everything, you need condition for it to arise. So when you have the what they call karmic inheritance, when you have made the necessary aspiration or adhittana or the refuge you have taken, all this will pave the way for you to connect so that you will meet up with the wise and the enlightened one. And these are the ones that can guide you and allow you to have the right understanding to cultivate appropriately. Okay? Do we have any more time? Okay, 5 more minutes. Maybe one more question. Cheng Hun, yes. Yes. You see, karma is like that. The Buddha actually talked about it under the Abhidhamma. We got 7 thought moments before we actually make that chetana. Chetana is what they call mental intention. So according to the teaching, the Abhidhamma, these 7 thought moments are very important, he said. If your chetana arises on the first thought moment, then it will be karmically effective only this life and the next life. Means if there is condition for it to arise, then they will get it. They reap what they sow. This life it will happen. Yes, it can happen. But if it's on, if it's on the first thought moment, is this life, got condition, it happen. No condition, the karma just cease, no more. The 7th one is next life. It will carry on until next life. If there is condition, it will manifest. If no more, it will cease. But the one that you make between the 2nd thought moment and the 6th thought moment follow you eternally, never disappear. Whenever there is condition, pop, it come out. Yeah. Karma is like that. No condition, nothing happen. That's why some people don't understand. They say, how come these people, politicians or certain very influential people, they do so many bad things, nothing happened to them? Not to say nothing happened to them. The condition has not arisen, understand? It's like, let's say, somebody who very wealthy, maybe he get his money through the what they call not so clean a means. So they actually the way they go about gathering their wealth and all those things is not to the proper way. But because when they are very wealthy, they are in the position to have this what they call power and influence, especially politicians. They are like, you cannot touch them, understand? Because they are all connected. But when the karma come, certain thing will happen. Then, due to crisis or whatever, then they lose this ability. Even certain rich people also same. They are hit by something. Then all of a sudden, they lose their power and influence. Then the bank come after them. Those people who wants to take revenge, like gangster, huh? When they know you are weak, they come and what they call ask back what they actually entitled to. Well, last time you forcefully take it from them. Then they like demand back. They come and take revenge on you. So when condition change, when you are weak, that is the time there is condition for karma to take effect. And then they suffer very badly. That's why you see a lot of politicians like Marcos, how he suffer. Then even a lot of these people, Sui Pian is Taiwan. Then you see many in history, even Hitler. Then even nowadays you see Saddam Hussein. Finally, also he has a very miserable death. Then you look at this, what they call the Libya one, Gaddafi. Then you also see a lot of this, what they call Middle East country. One by one, they come down. Then all those who are very tyrannic or evil, after some time, they also affected. So don't play a fool with karma. Karma is very potent, very powerful. For those who understand the cultivator, they see it happening every moment, every instant. You don't play a fool with karma. I realized this thing 20 years ago. I saw the karmic thing happening like that. Then, like I used to tell a lot of those who follow me, how many of you know Hokkien? Oh, good. I used to tell them, the nature's law is show it to you in your cultivation until you realize these five precepts not worthwhile to violate. In Hokkien, it's called Bo Kao Lu Bo Xiong Xin. It show it to you until you can never disbelieve it. The meaning is you can never disbelieve it. You will have to. It's like that one, so powerful. This moment you do like that, the next moment that thing come. When I was young, it showed it to me. Then when I understand, then I reflect back, then I realize, oh, so powerful. Then when I was in the midst of cultivation, those few months, everything happened so fast. The thought arise, the effect come already. Sometimes instantaneous. Show it to you. Good and bad, both also very fast. Then the wholesomeness also same, very powerful. That's why I stopped using this pure wish. Last time, my mind is so different. When I make aspiration or thing, it happened, it caused things to arise. Then there was one incident. It caused certain thing to arise. Because to fulfill my pure wish, I want to meet somebody. So for me to meet that person, something must happen. Otherwise, he wouldn't call me. I haven't met this person for more than 8 to 10 years. And surprisingly, he still got my house number. And because of that project that we do together, it catches fire, for no reason. That very day, I say, how nice if I can contact him again. I mean, just the pure thought, the fire happened to that project. Then all of a sudden, the next day afternoon, he called me at my house. Hey, I said, I was looking for you. How come you call me? He said, you don't know. I said, I don't know. He said, that project we were doing 8 years ago or 9 years ago, one of the hostel block catches fire. He said, oh, I said, I don't know. He said, it's still burning now. He said, the university called him. Yeah, he was the turnkey contractor. So because of that, I come to know it's so potent, so powerful. Cannot be so coincidental. Understand not? This moment, because it come about was because I got this very close friend, family friend. He wants to go to tour somewhere. And I know this person, his family own this resort. So that's why I say, I know the owner's son. I say, if I can contact him, I think we can arrange the trip. Then, after he left my house, I just make this aspiration. I didn't even like make a vow on this. I just tell myself, how nice if I can meet up with him again. But I lost his contact. I don't keep all this phone. The next afternoon, he called me. Then I went and see. Oh, my heart was very, very... I got a lot of compassion because I knew it's karmic. Nothing to do with me. Whatever that must happen is all karmically conditioned. Nothing to do with me. But I felt so bad, understand? So what happened was, after that, I don't want to use this anymore. I qualify it with another word. If it's for the good of the many, then only let it arise. Otherwise, don't. Because I was so careful after that, I dare not simply even arise a thought. Because it will cause things to arise. And not only the incident, many, many incidents. The thought arise, zoom, it happened. Sometimes when I just arise a thought, up there, a lot of things happen already. Because I met one lady. This lady, before he come to this earth to become a human being, he was one of the Deva's good friend, very close friend. And they can communicate with her. The day she was born, she can communicate with them and they can talk to her. And this is the lady that became one of our Dharma friends 20-odd years ago. And she was the one that kept on laughing. The Deva up there told her, she has to contact me because he said, I'm the longest cultivator on earth, he said. That time, he told me, within that group. Then he said, must contact through me. Then can contact another teacher. Then after we came to know, she was able to do all this. She only disclosed to me after that. Then she keep on saying, he said, they can read their mind, he said. Then he said, when I arrive, I thought they know. Then they will ask somebody to go and get the drinks for me. Then after that, when I was giving the Dhamma, if they want to understand anything, they will condition one of the people's mind to ask me that question. Then I will speak. And I can feel it because as I speak, the lightning and the thunder outside, very loud. Then after the Dhamma talk, all stop. There's a lot of this phenomena keep on happening. It's nothing to do with me. It's the way nature's law is, the way nature is. So the sign keep on coming on, and you can see it on. That's why I say, not until you have this experience or understanding, you will never believe all this right view, right understanding, the nature's law. Very powerful. That's why the five precepts never worthwhile to violate, because you pay very heavily. We better stop, eh? I took extra 5 minutes. Okay, we will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merits. Then after that, we end. Okay, sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyantang animoditwa Chirang Rakantu Loka Sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Itavata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice. May it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Okay, transfer merits to departed one. Itang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Itang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo.
idang me nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyateyo. Let this marriage accrue to our departed relatives, and may they all too be well and happy. Okay, we invoke the blessing for the nation. Eh? Devo vasatukalena sasa sampati hito cha pito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May all rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the ruler of the day, the government and the king of the day be righteous always. Okay, you make aspiration. Itmina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia. By the grace of this merit that we have acquired, may we always never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect to the Buddha, Kuan Yin, and all the worthy ones.
Let's thank Brother Teo by saying three times sadhu and pay respect.